chairman's prerogative. I'm going to mix up the schedule just a little bit, selfishly, and we're going to flip-flop the public comment and the break. So let's go ahead and have a 15-minute break. We'll come back at 11, and we'll do the public comment.
Excellent. Thank you.
Andrea, are you?
Adrian.
I apologize. Are you ready?
Yep, ready.
Dan?
Yep, recording. Okay.
All right, so public comment time. If anyone has something they'd like to say, just go ahead and at this time say your name, and I'll make a list, and we'll go through everyone one by one. Going once, going twice, three times. All right.
Move on.
Moving on. Next item on the agenda, we're moving into our unfinished business section here, so WIOA regulations.
All right, just for the record, I'll remind folks, that's the Workforce Innovations and Opportunities Act, known as WIOA. So the regulations are out. They were sent to us. Actually, there's the regulation specific to the VR program is a 1,000-page document, which you're
just
welcome
short
to read. And then there are other, there's the WIOA combined rules and another final rules related to adult education, which is a core partner of WIOA, as are we. And I think the other was rules specific to Department of Labor. But so we've spent most of what we're looking at in terms of the VR program. It's kind of one of those things that's there's so much it's hard to know really where to start with this. I guess the main thing is, well, a couple main things. We've worked on the state VR, the state plan, which is what we've always done in terms of our own agency state plan that we submit to the Federal Department of Education, RSA, and that now it's that whole thing is a portion of the state of Nebraska WIOA plan. And so, as you know, for months now, we've been involved with the core partners of Nebraska WIOA, developing the big plan as well as our own, and looking at what it is, how the parts of the work we do will intersect and collaborate with workforce overall. Some of the changes, I just like to kind of read through some of these specifics to give you a nutshell here. If the new roles require that all the assurances and descriptive information that were part of our own plan are submitted through as a part of the whole plan, so that's been done. That it states that updates to the statewide needs assessment and goals and priorities has to align with reporting with the combined plan. This is an area we're a little looking for clarification about because we've received, we checked with the federal folks and we were told there is not anything in the new regulations requiring every three years to do a comprehensive statewide needs assessment. But yet, there's a section in the WIOA that says your assessment has to be aligned with WIOA. So we aren't entirely clear yet, but we're looking at exactly what will be required. We do ongoing assessments anyway. That's always been part of our plan with the board meetings, reaching out to the public to see what is needed, going to the statewide consumer organizations and just reaching out in a lot of different ways, statewide ongoing. And that will certainly continue, no matter what the regulations say. That is part of what we do to make sure we're reaching Nebraskans. But a specific comprehensive statewide needs assessment is a little different in that it's we hire an outside entity to come in and do a whole kind of research assessment. So hopefully we'll get more information about that. The rules also clarify that we have to conduct public hearings, and so of course, you know, we do that for sure. There's different cross-referencing about the common performance accountability measures. The RSA standards and indicators that we've always used to, the Department of Education always used to judge the effectiveness of our program, and then in turn which we've used to help assess how we're doing. Those will no longer be official standards, and will all the parts of WEOR held to the common performance measures, which I do not really know enough about yet to talk about. Other states, and I think we may do this as well, will continue to use at least some of the basic standards and indicators internally to help us assess our progress and our achievements. But that's something we'll be talking about in management to decide how, whether we continue to use some of those, how we actually will work with the common performance measures. And so we really don't entirely know how that'll all work yet, but we're looking at it. It also emphasizes competitive integrated employment, which of course, for the most part, we have, you know, really emphasized that as well. So that'll be, that will fit well with what we do. Probably the biggest things that affect a lot of the agencies for the blind across the country. One is that homemaker is no longer a viable employment outcome. We've not used a lot of, we haven't used that goal for a lot of people, but for those where it fit, we have. But that's no longer an option. The other thing, I guess we don't have a lot of these, but it's significant in Nebraska, is unpaid family worker, which most often it's either small businesses or farms where the family, the individual that's blind needs the training in order to be a viable part of that family enterprise, but now that's not going to be an employment goal. So again, it doesn't really affect a huge number of people, but the concept is there that we'll need to work in a different way with people if that's their goal. Maybe find a different way to establish an actual wage-earning role as a part of the family business or whatever. So that'll be something we'll have to really look at. Let's see. There's still some confusion about the PRETS, pre-employment transition services. There are new definitions about student with a disability and youth with a disability. So student with a disability applies to all students enrolled in educational programs, including post-secondary education, as long as they satisfy the age requirements set forth in another section. And so this also includes students that are homeschooled, which at first in the draft regs was not clear. It will include those, as well as students in other non-traditional secondary educational programs. Exactly what, how that works, what that means, agencies across the country are working with the Commissioner of RSA in Education as to exactly how we do that, what that means. And let's see, and then the part that's reflects or impacts the budget that's really important has to do with the new requirements we must spend at least 15% of the federal allotment for pre-employment transition. In the reading, it'll look like PETS. We call it pre-ETS. If the agencies do not spend the full 15%, then there's the possibility funds will actually have to be returned to the federal government. It is something that the state is held to, not just each agency. So our agency is working with, talking with the Voc Rehab, the general agency. They have expressed they are really having trouble meeting that 15%. We, with all of our youth programs, are in pretty good shape, but we have to do it jointly to, or we have to look at it jointly with General VR to make sure the state VR coming into Nebraska is going to be solid.
So if we exceed the number, if we do an 18, 19, 20%, then that might assist.
Yes.
General Voc Rehab.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But does it work the other way? If we didn't do that, then the next year, the allotment that we're going to get, that number would drop? You know, like we've got X dollars and we got to spend 15% of that. If we don't, then the next year that X dollars is going to drop a little bit?
Well, the potential is, if I understand it correctly, that it wouldn't be next year. It would be actually the year in which you don't expend, you actually have to return money back to the feds.
I wonder if this might even turn into like a memorandum of understanding with the General Voc Rehab. If we meet our 15% and they don't, that any money that needs to be returned would come from them.
We would, I don't know if we'd put an official memorandum of understanding, but we definitely would address that aspect of it.
Okay.
For sure. Yeah.
Okay.
And in a way, it's already in writing because it's part of what's required in the state. I mean, as far as how VR, how the grant itself is given.
Okay.
So I think that would be, that would fit in that. The other thing that relates to budget that's the wrinkle on this kind of goes to your question, Chad, and that is that the grant funds can be carried over. The federal grant funds can be carried over. And so actually right now we're still spending 2015 grant funds because we've had additional money from reimbursement from Social Security for clients that have gotten employment. And we're required to spend those funds, that's called program income. You have to spend program income first before you spend your grant. So then if you have a lot of program income and you're spending that first, then the grant gets carried over. And so then you're spending that, which is good. It gives us the flexibility, really. But so exactly how it would work if money has to be returned, it's the good news, the good reason we don't know that is we haven't had to do that before, and hopefully we won't. Let's see. if we, there's an amendment requiring that the comprehensive statewide needs assessment must include the needs of students and youth with disabilities for voc rehab. That goes back to the earlier thing I mentioned. Let's see. And it also clarifies technical assistance that the agency may provide to educational agencies and permits us to provide transition services for the benefits of groups of students and youth with disabilities. There's also things that relate to how the services required. Yes. That are relates to the responsibilities of the local educational agencies and the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act IDEA, and how that coordinates with the requirements in WIOA. So let's see what else.
A little bit ago, yeah. Dr. Anzant, you were speaking about the statewide needs assessment, but there's a section in here on the first page of the report that you gave us, talking about section 361.20.
Yes.
Clarify and designate stated. Clarifies that designated state agencies must conduct public hearings to obtain comments on substantive changes to policies and procedures governing the VR program. Is that going to change the way that we, I don't know how often we make substantive changes, but is that going to change the way that we kind of operate? Because we, like, as you're saying, we, from a statewide needs assessment, we've operated a lot by making ourselves available instead at different events, meetings like this, trying to encourage people to come to us. We go to them, but is this going to change some of how we have to operate?
Not really. However, it does apply to we have four chapters of rule in state law that are our chapter one on scope of services and so on. We are at a point where we need to be revising those, and we are starting to look at that and look at the specific each chapter of rule. That's state rule, where this is the federal rule.
Right.
We will begin sometime in this next year the process of
You're talking about the stuff in the Nebraska Administrative Code.
Yes, that's correct. Okay. And so that is all a very rigidly defined process, which includes the public hearings as a part of, as we begin to roll out what those changes would be.
Okay.
The changes in the regulations, I could probably spend the rest of the day talking about.
Right.
So I think the major ones we've probably already talked about, and a lot of it is where all the state agencies are. I mean, the VR agencies across the country, we're learning how this will impact everybody. RSA is putting on three meetings. One is on the East Coast, I think in DC. One is in Chicago, and one I think in San Francisco. And the agencies are allowed two spots at those meetings. And it's dictated which state you gets to go to which one. So we're in the Chicago one. And the registration for it is not up yet, but as soon as it is, we'll get registered for our two spots. And there, maybe we'll be able to be on a waiting list for another spot. Probably it will be myself and Carlos attending that. If we get a third spot, then Bill Brown would go. But we're hoping that those meetings will, the purpose is to help clarify some of this.
You already spoke a little bit about the standards and indicators for the VR program, and with a thousand, with close to 1,000 pages of changes and stuff like that, I understand why you haven't fully digested all of it yet and know exactly how, what everything means. So I'm not wanting to put you on the spot, but I just want you to know that I am interested in learning how that, you know, what that's going to be like in the future, in years coming. So as you learn more about that, if you could inform us, I would like to know more about that.
Absolutely. By that, you mean the whole, all the changes or one specific?
So how the current standards and indicators for the VR program,
yes,
that we're not using those anymore?
Yes. Unless,
well, you're saying we maybe we will internally a little bit, but that's yet to be decided. But the new measurements that they're going to utilize, I would like to learn more about those.
Absolutely.
So that we can... I think we've started in the last few years to be more cognizant of the pre-existing standards and indicators and how we're performing on a national level, and I'd like to make sure that continues. So
yes, sir, absolutely.
There was another section in here, and again, for everybody in the public, this will, the document that Dr. Van Zandt had given us ahead of time will be part of the minutes. I don't know what page this is, there's no page numbers, but
yes.
Proposed section, this is, this is under supportive employment, I believe, and then second page of that, proposed. So limitations on use of subminimum wage.
Yes.
Section 511 of the Act, as added by WEOA, imposes requirements on employers who hold special wage certificates under the Fair Labor Standards Act that must be satisfied before the employers may hire youth with disabilities at subminimum wages or continue to employ individuals with disabilities at any age at the subminimum wage level. Section 511 also establishes the roles and responsibilities that of the DSUs and the VRs program. Hence, anyway, I keep reading, it's a little paragraph almost. With these rules, is that going to affect specifically employers like Outlook Nebraska in Nebraska and the opportunities that they're creating for blind employees today?
Well, the last that I checked with Outlook Nebraska, they do not have any subminimum wage.
Okay, mm-hmm. Perfect. Okay, I couldn't remember,
yes,
if they did or not. So that's great to hear.
Now, the workshops that employ like people with cognitive disabilities, mm-hmm, so far as I know, still do pay subminimum wages.
Okay.
We don't really have clients per se that,
right,
work there. So, but the potential would be that those would be impacted. I really don't know about it,
okay,
because there are other opportunities for blind people that we,
great,
work on.
Take
appreciate your patience with the whole thing. It's quite the process.
Yeah, I opened up, when I was reading through these, I opened up the other document and I saw a page carry on the stairs.
Yeah. I know.
Well, as if your day-to-day job isn't busy enough to have to take this on too, kudos, mm-hmm, to you.
Well, The whole leadership team is really working on all aspects of how this impacts, so.
Is it going to change the way we do business? I'm a numbers guy, and I think 15%, you have a $5 million budget, that's $750,000. How many pre-ents do we have, would you have you identified?
I can't tell you a number of clients, partly because what the definition of those was going to be is just coming out. But there are aspects that are confusing in what the rules say and what is being told some states from RSA, such as that orientation and mobility training in a group is pre-ets, individually is not. Mm-hmm. Now, to make sense of that?
Yeah.
No. A lot of what we've done this summer, as you can see, is group work. Mm-hmm. And expanding out to, like, the wonderful thing with Reboot was bringing in the kids, the students, and parents, and the teachers, so they all really could be learning together. And so, you know, we're trying to do things that will maximize that.
Can in that 15%, is that just programs and services, or can you prorate like labor, you know, your staff labor?
Direct services.
Whoa, that's
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is huge. Because our program is so strong, I think we're doing pretty well. The state agencies across the country are really, really sweating this. They aren't entirely sure how it's going to work. And, you know, I think everybody's behind the concept of with youth.
I get it. Yeah, you get
them
early.
It makes perfect sense exactly how it'll work. The other thing I really didn't talk about that I should say is the supported employment portion, which ours is only 30,000, so it's a drop in the bucket, but 50% of that has to go for pre-ets. So that's significant.
Even more. Yeah, we need to find as many pre-ets as we can, you know, to spread the wealth out there.
Making sure that we're serving the students that really need it.
It's a sound principle, you know, if you get them early and get them employed, that's a productive employee for a lifetime.
Exactly. Anything else on that? I feel like
I don't have anything else. So when you're ready to
segue
to move on to the budget and finding update,
which is a good segue because we have been talking about that. One thing I want to mention in terms of the overall budget, which it leads off from all this discussion about pre-ets. Relates to, you know, what about everybody else? And in the reading of our budget materials, one of the commissioners raised a really good point about what about the older blind and I would say in general other services to people beyond the pre-ets, but mainly the older blind, where's that at? Our monthly expenditures are less on that right now, but that's really because there's been so much effort on all these group programs. Then we will be definitely by the end of September, we believe that we will have fully spent our grant, our older blind grant. We really do need to get back to making sure we're providing good services to all ages, as well as thinking of how we could do things differently. One of the challenges is always there's the certain amount of funds. The older blind grant is a specific dollar amount, and it's a minority of our full funding, but it's a majority of people. And so, well, first of all, older blind people, some do want jobs. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who retire end up going back to work in some way or another, partly just because they want to be active, other and partly for money. So we can certainly work with any age on a vocational goal. But also, well, I guess that's a piece. Anyway, oh, and then the other part of it relates to there's only so many hours in the staff times day. And so how we statewide work at the effort that's required in to serve all the clients by the individual counselors in the area, you know, how do we do that? And so leadership team is working with, talking amongst ourselves and then with supervisors who then are working with the field staff and center staff about how can we best, you know, really provide the services that everybody needs. So that's kind of a ongoing challenge, I would say, but we're doing our best to be thoughtful about how we do that.
The money, the money that we're losing from the feds related to that, is that only about $40,000? Because reading through the budget information that you sent, it looks like we're asking for an additional $40,000 that may not have typically gotten in the past because of losing the federal funds.
Okay, part of that is correct. Okay. With our budget request, we are making a flat request with regard to most all of our requests for state dollars, except for we're required to put in the amounts for staff increase, I mean, the labor negotiated salary increases for staff. So when you end up looking at numbers, it'll look like more than the 51,000. But that's more of required by the budget process. So other than that piece, we're looking at not increasing our request, except for what you're mentioning, Mike, about that we're requesting an extra $51,313, I think, of state dollars for our budget. Of that $40,000, we're requesting to provide independent living services for those adults who do not have a vocational goal.
Okay.
The amount we got, it would replace what we used to get in what was called Part B, plus a little. What we got before was about $36,000. Well, that was the total grant of Part B, independent living. But we think $40,000 would enable us to do an adequate job of replacing those services, which will go away from our agency if we don't get additional funding for that.
Is it... Because I understand that, at least I think I understand that, you know, like when our staff fills out their timesheet, for instance, every week, that they're putting in, you know, where they're spending their time.
Yeah.
So that kind of helps to divvy out what pot, so to speak, that money's coming from to pay for their salary. So whether they were working in the past, whether they're working with Priets or VR or independent living or whatnot, so that will continue to they will be able to continue to put down that it was, you know, independent living or something like that, and then this $40,000 will cover our staff time, and it could be used for other things. But is there? I don't know that I would personally call it independent living, but is there a possibility that the people that we are not able to serve anymore with a VR occupation of homemaker or unpaid family employee or something like that could be served with independent living.
Right.
And is that whereas the $40,000 is covering the amount of the money, you know, roughly what we were getting and using for people who had previously had a traditional independent living case with us, will that $40,000 also be able to cover the people who may have had a homemaker classification before, or so on, or would we need to be asking for more than 40? Would we be needing to be asking for a greater amount to help cover those types of people?
I think we'll be all right. Like I said, there really weren't very many of those.
Okay.
But it's still, the concept is important to
right.
know about. Yeah, I think, you know, really realistically, and agencies have all been informed, Nebraska agencies, that we need to use restraint in our requests directly mm-hmm. from the governor.
Okay.
That, you know, tax receipts are down. We really must use restraint. We feel like we are, and mm-hmm. that this will let us do as good of a job as possible. Of course, part of what we're doing, in addition to this request for some additional funds from state money, is to be networking with the ACBN, the NFBN, and the Independent Living Centers to find ways that we can work together, maybe provide consulting to them to better serve people who are blind and need independent living things. So the budget process, I do want to mention that a little bit. The biennium we're in the biennium budget request cycle right now. August 1, I will submit the narrative, I've sent to you all a draft, and we'll be finalizing that this next week and getting that into the system. And then the full budget request, which includes all the line items of all the dollar amounts and the specific item codes and so on, that has to be submitted by September 15th. And then goes on through the process into the legislative session next year, calendar year, when the senators and the governor begin looking at all these requests, and then we go from there. In a nutshell, what else do I need to say about the budget? In general, our funding is going along pretty well. We've had conversations with the governor's budget office about our different grants and how they're changing and what aspects relate to the state funds as well as the federal funds, and so that's all in the works.
Okay.
Did you say, is there an appropriations hearing that will be this fall?
The hearing will be in the February, March
okay.
time.
In spring, okay.
In the spring, and we never get a lot of notice sure. about when that is. We will certainly be telling time. Everybody when it's time for that.
Okay. All right.
Can I make one comment, Mike?
Go right ahead.
You know, as I'm going to say this more as just a taxpayer and a person of Nebraska, it's great that we all identify as a significant amount of money for the pre-eds. And it's great that we want to spend all that money so that we don't have to give it back. I do worry if there was ever a perception, either from within the people we're helping or from those that observe it, that if we're spending a lot of extra money that maybe isn't the best use of our resources, mm-hmm. and we need to be careful, because two things can happen. One, we can establish a sense of entitlement where we've given all this money to these pre-ets people and programming, and then we take it away eventually. So then they have, they're on their own. And then secondly, you know, when you've got other people struggling, and then we see us as an agency spending money that maybe seems like it's, they don't understand the reasoning behind it. We have to be cautious about that. I don't know, but as a taxpayer, sometimes if we can't, and I'm not saying this is the case here, but if we can't really spend the money the best we can, you know, maybe sometimes it's better to give it back. You know, so I know we don't like to hear that, but.
And I just will comment. I really agree with you about that. I think one of the biggest challenges is that it won't just be the Priets part that's taken back. It'll be the budget for everybody that's taken back. And so the whole VR program in Nebraska would be jeopardized. Mm-hmm. So I hear you, though.
Nothing. You know, but, and it's just a perception thing. Well, people don't understand. I think it's a great one. We can invest in the young people and, you know, give them the right attitude and the right tools and the support. But, you know, there's
almost like there's a need to have an accountability for services that we, or, you know, for the kids, if there was a way that they could show what they've done with what has been given to them. You know, I don't know.
That's true, too.
I don't know.
And actually, to that point, we are working on ways to maybe do very specific follow-up and assessments of, and because we are trying a lot of new things, and we need to know did that really have a positive impact over time.
Well, that's good. You know, if you can do that, that'll kind of gauge the value. I know it's hard. You're trying new things, and it's, you know, I applaud you for trying different things, and I encourage you to continue to do that. But, you know, let's do the things that work and shed the ones that don't.
Amen.
All right. Well, moving on then, next item on the agenda is a newsline update. I won't go through the full report. I'll give the quick highlights here. The full report will be in the minutes. Newsline coordinator generally gives us a lot of information about minutes usage, new subscribers, that sort of thing. But there's a couple things that happened here in the last few months with the Newsline program. For a while now, we've had access to the Target circular ads and so on, and they've now added Walmart. So you now you have access to the Walmart's ads. So that was something. And then I guess three new magazines have been added: Jet Magazine, Sky News, and The Forward. And if you'd like to read more about what those magazines are, and it is in the full report from our Newsline coordinator, and that'll be in the minutes. So the next thing on the agenda is the client assistance program. Any complaints or issues? Has there been anything come up, Dr. Van Zandt?
There have not been any complaints or issues.
Okay. All right. Well, that's easy then. The next thing on the agenda is something new. I'll just briefly say why it's here. For a long time, we have had an anonymous staff suggestion box. Thinking about it, I felt that staff might feel that it's a black hole, that while they may submit something, they might not know whatever happens to it. And so these are anonymous, but I am going to, we're going to cover them real quick just so that the staff members know that we did receive them. And I will make sure that I sanitize them in the sense that if there's any names or privileged, you know, information here, that's not given, so that we keep these are appropriate for meeting minutes, but we want the staff to know that they are being heard. We look at every single one of these. Some of them are things that we can't immediately do anything with, but they're suggestions that we put away for future reference and to consider. And some of them are things that we act on immediately, and sometimes that might be by working with management at NCBVI. So the first one that came in the last 2 months was it was a staff issue. It dealt with emails. Somebody felt that there was some inappropriate emails being passed around the office, or unnecessary emails being passed around the office would probably be more properly stated, not inappropriate, but just not necessary. And we passed that one down to NCBVI management, and it was addressed. The other one that has come in was a staff member was concerned that taxpayers funded wages clients and their families to attend the convention of the National Federation of the Blind in Orlando. And is this really a good use of financial resources? Can the kids at that age really be expected to sit through general sessions and understand fully what's happening and get much from their attendance? And I'll take a crack at answering that one, because I think I have a pretty good idea, and I do support that they went. I think everybody going to those types of conventions gets something different out of them. When you go to those types of conventions, somebody who's been blind for a long time and is older is going to get something out of it totally different than somebody who is a younger person or a newly blind person. And for instance, a parent going is going to get, a sighted parent is going to get something totally different out of it than what a blind person or a blind child will. Wages students going down to conventions like this, whether it be the NFP or the ACP, are going to see a large number of blind individuals traveling independently, moving around a very large facility. They're going to be able to meet people who are successful in life, have create good role models, inspire them. Are they going to absorb all the you know, everything that speakers are talking about legislatively? Yeah, probably not. But
most adults don't even do that.
Yeah. But I think that there's a lot of great things that they do get from it. They get to meet other people and network. Because there are events there for people of different ages, there are things that are specifically for younger kids. I hope that they took advantage of that, and I'm sure that the wages staff made sure that they were aware of those things. And so that's my thought from a wages student standpoint. From a parent standpoint, if you're the parent of a blind child, and that's your first experience with a blind child, Becky made a comment earlier about a comment you heard from the Parents of Blind Children's workshop there about working with, you know, making sure your child is doing all the same things as a sighted child. I know I'm paraphrasing that, but so that they can be successful in a sighted world. And you know, if you're a parent of a blind child, and that's your first experience with a blind child, I'm sure there's a perception of having to do more for them. And again, seeing successful blind people, you know, what your child is capable of growing up to and doing is something very important, so that they know that a blind child is not somebody who will, you know, they're going to have much lower expectations that they're going to be able to be successful in life and accomplish great things as well. So I think that there are definitely positive outcomes from people who or from both of these groups of people who went and attended.
I'd like to add to that when you're done.
Yeah, I'd say I'm just about wrapping up, and I think Robert would like to say something as well. So I would so I do support them going, but I do appreciate the comment from the staff member because just as Mark was commenting, you know, I think we always need to be conscious of how we spend our funds, and that we be good stewards of the money that is given to us, and that we do it in an appropriate manner. So I appreciate the comment from the staff member, but I guess I just want to support the commission for what for the activity that they had planned. So, Robert?
Well, I just wanted to point out that, that Pearl shared with us an email that was sent to the commission from one of the parents, mother, you know, about the experience that she and her son received from, you know, that event. So that was really a super positive, you know, response, you know, from taxpayers, from parents, you know, that they had the opportunity to go. So that was good to see that.
Yep.
And, yeah, I was going to say, and it's much more than just the meetings that these kids were exposed to. I was able to talk to some of the parents and some of the students alike, and I wrote down a couple things that the parents had told me, and what you were saying, Mike, is, you know, they are able to see confident, successful, blind people who are doing a variety of, having a variety of careers, not just the comfort level careers, you know, and I think sometimes our kids get trapped into doing something or thinking they can only do certain things because that's their comfort level. And that's the PI camp. I think that's going to be awesome for them to know that being in the harbor is a place of comfort, but there's so much more that you can do, and you need to get out of the harbor. But anyway, and also the parents were, they mentioned, you know, seeing their kids with friends that of like interests and just different abilities and just being with their friends. And talked to the students, and they said that too, and hanging out with friends. And one student mentioned to me, which I really appreciate what they said, is that she said it was liberating, that they were allowed to be themselves, that they could, and also that they were able to explore the grounds and without always being asked, you know, do you need help or do you need help finding something? It's just allowing them to explore and to just find their way on their own and not being always asked for help or... and then I was actually there with one of my students was there, and she was just so excited about the new technology, getting her hands on the new technology, because not, you know, being in schools, they're not privy to being able to get all the technology that is available for blind students, and just being able to get their hands on all that stuff. So anyway.
Sure. It's a great opportunity for a high school student to be able to say, you know, I want to, you know, this device or this device, and how can a school is enabled to easily give them one of each to play with, and here they have an opportunity where they can tickle both.
Yep, so it was, I appreciated the comment too, but it was much more than just meetings and much more than just, awesome opportunity.
If I could just add on that, I'm going to pigtail on what I said earlier, though. I think it's, you know, I applaud you for trying something, you know. I hope that we can kind of measure or get some kind of quantitative value in this. And I don't know if every year you have a different wages student. I certainly don't think we need to send the same student there twice, you know, on the public time. And then also there is another consumer group organization out there. And I don't know that it's... Could you experience the same thing in 5 days versus 7 days? You know, can we do some things to maybe also accomplish what we want to do, but do it in a more cost-effective way and then more inclusive way? And then, you know, the only way we do know is when we try. So I'm not I'm not criticizing for you for trying something. My first thought was kind of like the staff members. I thought, wow, that's a lot of money, you know. And I'm 50-some years old. I was a professional, and it's a struggle for me financially to go. And a lot of people that are in consumer group organizations never get that opportunity. Mm-hmm. Does that mean they're going to be failures? No, but we can try to emulate that, those same types of experiences more locally. So, you know, we need to try to do both, but I think there's some things that we need to, you know, continue to look at how we best spend our money and how we allocate it. So thank you.
And a comment on the wages. I realize, you know, when they're taught the, you know, one job, but how many of us actually have one job for our whole mm-hmm. lives? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I appreciate the thought of, you know, one time, but I don't think they're given the same job the next year. They're given a different experience, and it's I don't know.
I think what Mark was saying was not that they would only be able to participate in wages one year. It wasn't that. It was that,
and it would be a different job the next year.
Yeah, the wages student would only go to the
yeah, get the family experience one time. Yeah, because you know we have to.
Oh, you're talking about the convention. Yeah, oh, I thought you were talking. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the wages program.
Yeah, you know, because what I would hate to see is have two or three experiences.
Definitely.
I mean, not that it's not bad, but you know, we have to be good stewards of our money and.
Oh, sure.
You know, so and then I guess to throw in the ACB. You know, what a consumer group is about choices, and if we're not giving people choices, then you know, they need to be able to make their own decisions eventually. So.
I've got a comment real quick. I'm glad that we gave them the opportunity to go and, you know, talking about measuring what kind of, experience that they got from it. You know, it might not be reflective in that child, you know, 2 days later, 2 weeks later, 2 months later, but it's the seed that's planted. Mm-hmm. And where that child goes with that, you know, in the future, I think can be huge. And granted, they're going to go and have a good time and do this mm-hmm. and that, but, you know, that, like I said, that seed might not show until years down the road, and then it's going to reflect big time.
All right. Well, I think we've exhausted that one a little bit.
Sorry.
That's all right.
That's all good.
It's all good.
Well, I know I've been talking a lot, but, you know, I just want to make a comment that when we get these staff suggestions, we do take them very seriously.
Yes,
and
we do.
We want to keep anonymity and, you know, give them their just due.
All right. So anyway, this will be just like the client assistance program. The CAP complaints and issues has always been a normal item on our agenda, even when there aren't any, like this quarter. This will be a normal item on our agenda moving forward. If there are any that come forward, we'll cover them. If not, we'll continue on. So, the next item on the agenda is the Nebraska Business Enterprise update.
Okay, I'll try to be quick, and if you have questions or more or one more details, let me know. Okay.
Sure.
Question: can everyone hear Carlos? Fine. I think we can. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Go ahead.
As a result of several meetings with top management for administrative services, the senator chair of the appropriations committee, Mike, the chair and I went to meet with him, the governor's office, and also the attorney general office, we were able to make some accomplishments in the last few months. For instance, we negotiated a new contract with the state office building, and now our vendor is not paying rent. Actually, the vendor is now taking for him an extra $1,400 he was paying for rent. Mm-hmm. The other progress is that the Department of Roads, an entity that didn't want to even open for bids, awarded us two contracts, one for a small cafe, which started on July 5th, and it's being run by the state office building with caterers. We also got another contract for vending machines on those same three buildings. We are going to install the 13 machines and start on September 1st. Both of those contracts are without rent. Another recent opportunity was presented by the Nebraska Department of Corrections to operate between 9 to 11 buildings across the state. I think we sent you information about that in the past few months, but finally Don is going to meet with them this coming Wednesday to take a look at the first building in Lincoln. We are going to start moving first Lincoln, then Omaha, and then the rest of the state. We were also contacted by the State Administrative Services saying that the state office building in Omaha will be available by the beginning of October, and chances are that we will be getting that location as well. So those are very exciting opportunities, 4 new locations as a result of maybe 2.5 years of traveling and pushing things. At the last meeting, Mike was there when we talked to the governor's office, the chair of the appropriations committee, mm-hmm. and the attorney from administrative services.
Right.
Their message was they were trying to make it work, but they didn't want to amend the law.
Right.
And since then, they are pushing, we are getting opportunities. So we just have to be diplomatic, be diligence. As a word,
vigilant.
Mm-hmm. But we will let consumer groups do their job if they want to advocate strengthen the law. We have a new vendor who started in Norfolk with 2 small post offices. Another new licensee started over a month ago running the Nebraska Historical Society museums, 2 small buildings, plus 4 small post offices in Lincoln. In the past, the business enterprise program of the MBE team was seen or viewed as a very separate program, to the extreme that counselors will look at their caseload, and if they couldn't place a client anywhere, their last choice was the vending program. And once they, I'm going to use a tough word, drop the client with the program BEP, they didn't do anymore. It was up to the MBE team. What we are trying to do, or we have been trying for the past couple of years, is to involve counselors and the field more with the program. So they train the clients ahead of time, they identify those clients, and once there is an opportunity available, they are the ones working together with the MBE team in order for the client to be successful. Another part of the equation is we are contracting with Ability Funds, an entity that specializes on small businesses, both finding right people for that population, 2, training them, and 3, supporting them on any needs they have in the future. So that they are already coming to meet with some of our vendors. Last year, after the annual retreat, we decided not to have the annual retreats anymore. I was a little too costly talking about saving money. So the way we are doing training is in each quarterly meeting, the blind licensees invite somebody to come to provide training. And the last quarterly meeting was the person from Ability Funds. That's all I have, and then you have questions, then just the Department of Roads ADA project is still on ongoing basis. Ryan, we are going to be next in Grand Island, I think. Any questions?
Just run super quick on, so those problem vending machines that we had that was bugging people for the longest time, has that all been resolved?
The problems they have been all resolved, but that doesn't mean there may be new problems. Credit America sent the experts to take a look at the machine. It looks like some connection was not right there, so they changed those, and it seems to be working. We cannot guarantee until the winter comes back again, because right now the machines are working fine because of the weather.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So some of the problems were, or sometimes you have more problems creep up in inclement weather times than...
It was very cold, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Good to know.
Carlos, based on your discussions with the governor's office, would you suggest that it would be advisable for consumer groups to consider legislation to mandate that the state offices be available for blind vendors? Or are you satisfied with the progress you're making?
I was afraid you were going to ask me tough questions later. Okay, let me be very honest.
Yeah.
I'm satisfied how it is now. Okay. However, once the administration or this new administration move on, I'm concerned that somebody else could interpret it in a different way. So I think to be safe, we need a stronger law.
Can I add something to that, Carlos?
Sure.
I agree entirely with what Carlos just stated, and something that when I accompanied Carlos to one of these meetings, something that was stated that makes this a little difficult for a consumer group, and something, so if a consumer group would like to pursue it, something that they need to take into, keep in mind, is that you're asking for preferential treatment for a class of citizen, and that's something that the members of the unit might be a difficult, it is sometimes a difficult sell to members of the unicameral. And so, not that it's not the right thing to do, but that be prepared to be able to back up and answer that question when it arises.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because I certainly don't want to undermine the progress you made, and I applaud you for doing that. I mean, that's great that you're making some good inroads there and getting more blind opportunities for blind people. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Pearl
went to most of
the
meetings. People came to our building, went to also the state office building. Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? No. All right. Well, Carlos, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Sure.
All right. See, 12, 14, public comment. Just a quick housekeeping. Do we know when lunch is going to arrive?
12:30.
It is going to be here at 12:30. All right. So the next items on the agenda deal with the audit committee. We only have 10 minutes scheduled for that. I think that might take a little longer. So I'm going to set that one aside for just a minute and take care of a couple other quick ones that I think will go quickly, and we can end with hopefully close to 12:30 here with public comment lunch. After lunch, we'll come back to the audit committee and get that taken care of. So the next thing I want to take a look at real quick was last time we reviewed and discussed some proposed changes to the commission board's job description. And so I guess I just want to ask the board, is there any more discussion or questions or anything regarding that, the proposed changes that we walked through last time? I have all the changes in front of me again. I can read them if that's what's desired. I have the old and the new job description in front of me. Is there any questions?
Mm-mm.
No?
No, we're all good.
We're all good with that?
Good to go.
Okay. I'm happy to review it if need be. Otherwise, I would entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, so I hear a motion to accept the proposed changes for the commission board job description. And so by Robert, and that was seconded by Chad. Roll call vote, Chad.
Discussion first.
Oh, yeah, does any further discussion?
This is Pearl, I have a question.
Yep.
Will the actual text of the changes be part of the minutes?
Sure, it was in the last meeting's minutes.
Okay.
And I can provide it for this meeting's minutes as well, that's fine.
Thank you.
Happy to do that.
Thank you.
Sure.
And everybody can read that.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think last time we provided the old text, the new text, and a description of the changes.
Oh.
And we can do the exact same thing.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay. So roll call vote, Chad?
Yes.
Robert?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Becky?
Yes.
Mike? Yes. Okay. So that is taken care of. The next item on the agenda that was to discuss and act on a memo requesting notice from the executive director prior to retirement or resignation. And this is just the commission board working on its own succession planning efforts. We don't have any inside knowledge to anything that Dr. Van Zandt has planned or is thinking through. This is just us thinking through types of things that we feel we need to have in place. So just like how the commission itself has a similar policy for its staff, we wanted to create one for Dr. Van Zandt as well. And so this would be something that would obviously apply to her and to anybody else that would hold her position in the future. So it's not a hint, it's something else. So when we read through this at our last meeting, I think the only comment, and somebody please correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the only comment was that the time period that we had for notice prior to retirement, I think we asked for 12 months was what was written, and we thought about, there was a discussion about making that a shorter time period. I can't remember the length of time that was suggested, if it was 6 months or 3 months or something like that, but is there any further thoughts about that? Does somebody need me to reread this again?
I know we did have some discussion about, is it realistic to expect a year? And I think in an ideal world, that's definitely desirable. We also discussed, well, she's not going to be bound by this by any means, right? This is kind of a suggestion, or is it a mandate?
Well, it's, I guess if she's
if she wants to put in a 6 month notification, it's not like we can say, oh no, you got to stick a year.
Yeah.
That's the best practices that we're talking about.
This is what our request is. I'm not sure what punitive action, I guess, that we would hold over Dr. Van Zandt's head for not complying.
Yeah, that's my question.
This is a request. In fact, I'll just sit here and I'll just read it.
Well, if it's a request, then that's different. We can ask anything.
The audit. I'm sorry, I got the wrong piece of paper in my hand.
Can you just read that?
I'm going to read it right now. Yeah.
Just that.
Okay, so draft policy statement, timely notice of retirement by the executive director. To executive director from MCDVI Board of Commissioners, date. Regarding timely notice of retirement by the executive director, I should probably have that say retirement or resignation. While the position of the executive director of the Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired does not fall under the standard policy of the state of Nebraska, state of Nebraska Department of Administrative Services Division of State Personnel. The Board of Commissioners does try to be fair and honorable in its requests of the individual holding this position. While the NCDVI policy regarding timely notice of resignation or retirement asks that administrators give 1 month notice prior to resigning or retiring, the NCDVI Board of Commissioners feels that due to requirements of the person holding the position of executive director, that it would be that it will take substantially longer for a search committee to fill this position. For this reason, we would request that the executive director provide, and here's the amount in question, 12 months notice prior to retirement. Being that the executive director is still expected to perform all of their normal duties during this time of transition, the Board of Commissioners will not restrict the executive director from traveling or attending conferences as needed during their final months in the position. The Board of Commissioners also understands that 12 months notice is not practical in the event that the executive director might wish to resign. If it is the intent of the executive director to resign from their position, the Board of Commissioners would request that 60 days notice be given. During this period, the Board of Commissioners would name an interim executive director. Once an interim executive director has been named, both individuals are asked to work together to ensure as smooth of a transition as possible while the Board of Commissioners begins the search process for permanent replacement. Failure to provide prior written notice to the Board of Commissioners in the amount of time outlined above may be considered as separated, not in good standing. This is similar wording to what's being used in the staff memo as well, as I recall. May be considered as separated and not in good standing. If written notice has been given less than 10 days prior to the resignation or retirement, the individual will be presented with a letter notifying that they are not, that they may not be, there's the word may, that's not a definite, may not be eligible for rehire in the event application is made for reemployment at some future date. So the weight that we hold, the hammer that we hold over the executive director here is future employment. Mm-hmm. If she were to choose to come back to state employment in Nebraska, or I would have to check employment anywhere else, and she was to be, and she used, and her new future possible employer were to check with us as far as her status when leaving, that might be separated, not in good standing. I mean, I don't believe the state gives many details, but that might be what would be given. So, anyway, that's it. That's how that reads. The 12 months was commented that might be excessive, and I guess I'm throwing out there because unless somebody else has another time frame, that I, in case of retirement, I don't believe 6 months is out of line. If you're planning on retiring, that you're probably not planning on retiring in the next 60 days. You're usually beginning that process much earlier. And so I would request that I think it's not unreasonable to request 6 months.
I think that's
months
a respectful
notice.
Time.
Yeah. And if it's shorter than that, it doesn't necessarily mean that she would be separating with not in good standing. That would be, right. If there's good reason for not giving it. you know, but something, some life-altering event happens, and then that, you know, that's understandable, so.
Any other discussion? So do you think we should make a motion to change it from, or does, I guess, does it need a motion to have to change it from 12 months to 6 months?
We need a motion to do something. So no matter what, there needs to be a motion to, I guess, accept the memo to accept the policy, or to move the policy forward. And then, if there was somebody wanted to make a motion to move it forward with the correction of changing it from 12 months to 6 months, that I think would probably serve some purpose. Okay, so Chad has, Commissioner Bell has moved that we change the draft policy from 12 months notice prior to retirement to 6 months notice.
Second.
And then approve the policy at that point.
Yeah. Yep.
And Becky, Commissioner Reakin has seconded that. With the change,
yes.
Yep. And a person that they knew a year ahead of time, they could show that with us. What the heck, you know? So.
Yep. All right. Roll call vote. Chad?
Yes.
Was there any discussion, or did you have it?
No. That's
all right. Okay, Robert?
Yes.
Mark?
Aye, yes.
Okay, Becky?
Yep, yes.
Okay. And I say yes. So that, we'll make that change from 12 months to 6 months, and then we'll file this away in our files, but I'll send you the memo for you to file away and have notice of. All right. So that puts us at 12:27. I'll just ask real quick, is there any public comment at this time?
Jim, yeah. Okay. Standing in the way of lunch.
That's all right.
I also have a public comment.
Okay. So Jim? Bob? Anyone else?
Actually, I have something I want to say to you. Diane.
Okay.
You want to hold this over?
Diane? Okay.
All right.
Go ahead, Jim.
All right. I will make this quick. First of all, I appreciate the comment that was made by the staff member about the concern with the Orlando NFB trip. I will make a couple questions and a comment. Mark and I were at Wages a few weeks ago, and we did go around the room and ask, you know, what the clients, or the Wages clients, got out of the convention. And not one of them indicated, you know, the meetings and so on and so forth. And Chad, you're right. There may be a point down the road where they may have benefited from the trip to Orlando. The question I have is, how was the decision arrived to send the center clients or the Wages clients to Orlando? What funding mechanism was used to do that, and how much did it cost the taxpayers?
Go ahead.
So let me give this a little bit to Carlos, but why don't I just do that to talk about the discussion on the decision.
Yes, we sent applications to the parents because they are the ones who fill out the forms. And we asked the parent to write down the consumer convention they want their child to attend. That's how it was decided. So the parents, I guess, we assume they talked to the students.
We also what basis of information did they have to make that decision?
We told them to look at the internet for both consumer conventions and make a decision.
Did they talk to anyone, or was this all based on
I don't know. We told them to make that decision. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I will confess, though, so you will have all the facts, because I don't want to hide anything.
Mm-hmm.
When parents sometimes ask, where do you guys go? most staff members said to the NFP convention. So just want you guys to know that too, okay? Mm-hmm. Because they were asking.
Okay.
So that was one of the questions I heard they were asking. I said, well, people are asking, that's fine.
So. Okay, that's right.
Okay, thank you, Carlos. And then as to the amount of money that it costs, I don't have that yet. But part of it is part of the whole wages, expenditures anyway, so, but I can't answer that right now.
Well, could you ask us, Pearl, did it cover like airfare and lodging and a meal per diem?
Yes.
And that was for what, like the wages participant and family members?
A family member.
Oh, one? Okay.
Right.
So it wasn't the whole
$15.60.
Okay.
In some cases, more members of the family went, but that was on their own cost.
Okay.
Some cases didn't come.
Oh, yes, and not every wages student had a family member go along. Yes, thank you. Okay. All right, next.
Bob. I also want to comment on the trip to Orlando, and I think one point that I think is important is the role models that were available to blind people there, and I think we have to ask the question, can the program be replicated in Nebraska? And I think there are aspects that cannot. You know, in Orlando there were divisions that were very special, with very special focuses on different occupations and different interests. You know, Becky, you mentioned the parents of blind children. They had several activities going on during that program that I think provide the networking, the role modeling, and information and resources that you just can't get here in Nebraska. And I think that, you know, the same thing can be said for the other division that offered people access to people who are successful in a variety of occupations, ranging from public employees to veterinary science to merchants to just most occupations that people might be interested in. You know, and I think there's that value that I think is important to mention.
Yes, Carlos, I just want to make one point of clarification.
Should I go to the point of clarification or go
that,
to
that, the point of clarification is all right.
Yeah, I'm sorry, before I forget, when I mentioned that some parties asked staff members which convention most staff members went and folks said NFP, we also instructed staff that to make sure that if a parent or a client who wasn't cleared wanted to go to the ACB convention, we will send staff members with them too. Okay, so we emphasize that.
Okay.
Diane.
On the same subject area.
Okay.
Prior to being employed with this agency, I've worked 30 years with youth. And most of that has been interconnected with the schools and education. So as I was listening to all that, I was kind of thinking outside of the box of just blind and visually impaired youth. I mean, as a country, from an educator's perspective, we're challenged constantly to keep up with the rest of the world as far as skills and technology and employment and international. And I know just from listening to superintendents and leaders within the schools, that's a challenge we have for all of our youth. So as I was listening to this, I was thinking kudos to this agency for any opportunity for any of our youth, no matter what group they fall into, that we utilize any opportunity we have for I don't know if there's international connections to the our convention, but just giving our opportunity in the our youth in the Midwest the opportunity to even connect with youth from all across our country, from the coast to, you know, we live, we're very, having lived in Nebraska and then lived on a coast for about half and half of my life, you know, we're kind of sheltered here as far as a lot of things. So just having that opportunity for any youth group to, I mean, it's on behalf of all of our kids and what they bring back to their communities from that experience. And I also think from the parental piece, as a country, our parents are not as involved in our youth's upbringings or education or schools, and to promote that and encourage that is what, I mean, we need. So I'm kind of looking at not limiting it to looking at this from just, you know, our agency youth, but on a bigger perspective. It's kind of, to me, a good model, and that can also be used as kind of rationalizations for why we would do it.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other additional comments?
I guess, Pearl, based on your experience, are any other states doing that, sending like wages participants to the national conventions?
Yes, okay. There are some that do. And in fact, this year, one of the things that was mentioned in the planning is that some students were maybe thinking about going to a program, a summer program in another state, because that group always went to a convention. So some do. It's not widespread.
Okay. Well, I would feel better if other states are doing that. So.
Yeah.
Aaron, Fritz? We're just finishing up here. Since you guys are here, I just wanted to give you. If you guys had any comments that you wanted to make, otherwise I'm going to close public comments and we're going to break for lunch.
Thank you. I don't have anything.
Anything either.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. All right. If there's no other public comments, then we will break for lunch. It looks like the food is arriving. It is 12:38. We allotted a half hour, so let's see if we can't get back here at like 1:10 or something like that.
Yep.
Hi.
You ready?